This episode of The Stand is a repost. On October the 16th, we asked Professor Avi Shlaim about his response to Israel's pronouncement that they were going to seek out Hamas, who were responsible for the atrocity on October the 7th, which saw 1,200 Israelis die and over 240 taken as hostages. It was the worst attack on Israel since the state's inception and the worst mass murder of Jewish people since the Holocaust. In this episode, Professor Shlaim outlines the history of the divisions involving Israel and the Palestinian people.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now we are about to witness another chapter in the terrible history of relationships between the State of Israel and its neighbours, the Palestinian people in particular. There is much talk. People have been demonstrating at the weekends around the world. It is, though, very important that we understand what the issues are and what the facts of this situation are before we have an opinion, make our minds up, and make our views known. And with that in mind, it's a great pleasure to welcome to The Stand Professor Avi Shlaim. He is an author, an Oxford historian of the Middle East. He is Emeritus Professor of International Relations at the University of Oxford and a Fellow of the British Academy. He was born in Iraq, he is Jewish, and he has written a number of books about the Middle East and the problems therein. One, Israel and Palestine, Reprisals, Revisions, Refutations, and his most recent book is Three Worlds, a Memoir of an Arab Jew, published this year. He served in the Israeli army and has never questioned the Israeli state's legitimacy. But its merciless assault on Gaza has led him to devastating conclusions. Professor Shlaim, you're very welcome to The Stand and we're very grateful to you. Let me ask you first where the present moment sits in this long and tragic history. The latest news we have about 10 minutes ago, and we're talking on Monday morning, is that the Rafah crossing to Egypt is closed, even though Israel had urged Palestinians to go there to escape. Nothing is getting in, nothing is getting out. How significant is this moment? How dangerous is it? And where does it belong in this long and tragic story?
As you say, this is a very long and tragic story. The Zionist-Palestinian conflict is over 100 years old, and Britain is the main, Britain is largely responsible for this conflict.
Yes.
Because in 1917 it issued the Balfour Declaration, which promised to support the establishment of a national home for the Jewish people in Palestine. In 1917, The Jews were 10% of the population. The Arabs were 90%. The Jews owned only 2% of the land. Yet Britain allocated national rights to the minority and denied national rights to the overwhelming Arab majority. So this is the original sin.
Yes.
And today we are struggling with the consequences of the British betrayal of the Palestinians. I don't have time to go over the history of the British mandate in Palestine, but I can sum it up for our listeners in one sentence. Britain stole Palestine from the Palestinians and gave it to the Zionists.
Yes.
This is basically why we are where we are.
Yes. And can I ask you to make the distinction for me and our listeners between Judaism and Zionism?
Judaism is a religion.
Yes.
And there are Jews everywhere in the world, and they belong to different countries. They speak different languages. They have different cultures. They are united by their religion. Whereas Israel is a nation state. It's a member of the United Nations. And it's a sovereign state. And this is the distinction between Judaism and the state of Israel. And friends of Israel and Israelis, the Israeli government deliberately conflate anti-Semitism with anti-Zionism. But there is a clear distinction between the two. I define anti-Semitism as hatred of Jews because they are Jews, whereas anti-Zionism is criticism or opposition to the specific policies of the Israeli government, especially in relation to the Palestinians. And it's possible that criticisms of Israel would be, that anti-Zionism, it can be anti-Semitic, but
yes,
only if you can prove that the motive of the critic is hatred of Jews.
Yes.
But most criticisms of Israel, most of the criticisms that of Israel are nothing to do with anti-Semitism or hatred of Jews.
No.
They are to do with the brutal Israeli occupation and the brutal treatment of the Palestinians. But as I said, Israel and its friends try to conflate the two in order to silence legitimate criticisms of Israel.
Yes, and the State of Israel was formally set up in 1948?
Yes.
And immediately there was trouble between Arab and Israel.
Yes, the UN voted for the partition of Palestine into two states in 1947, a Jewish state and an Arab state.
Yes.
The Jewish agency accepted the partition plan, and the Arabs rejected it. The Palestinians, the neighboring Arab states, and the Arab League all rejected partition as immoral, unfair, and they went to war to nullify partition. Now, partition was a UN resolution to divide mandatory Palestine into two states.
Yes.
But it was totally unfair to the Palestinians because it was their land. They were the majority, and yet the Jews were a minority, were to receive 55% of the territory. This partition plan was never going to work. It's the British who brought it about by surrendering the mandate to the United Nations, just as they did with Ireland.
Yes.
They divided Ireland and left.
Yes.
And the result has been trouble between the two communities. The same happened in India in 1947.
Yes.
The same happened in Palestine. So the Palestinians had just this on their side, and there was a war. They went to war. Israel won that war and extended its borders beyond the UN partition resolution,
yes,
from 55% of mandatory Palestine to 78% of mandatory Palestine. But the Arabs did not accept the state of Israel as legitimate. They always saw it as an extension of European colonialism and Western,
yes,
imperialism into the Middle East, as a foreign body in the heartland of the Middle East. That's what the conflict between Israel and the Arab has been, and the Arabs has been about. But the core of the conflict has always been a clash between two national movements, the Jewish national movement or Zionism and the Palestinians. That's the heart of the core of the conflict. And this is what the events, the terrible events that we're witnessing unfolding today, they are the result of this basic clash between Israel and the Palestinians.
I want to, in a moment, ask you about Netanyahu and what might be called Netanyahuism in the extensions and all of that. But let me ask you first, you served Israel as a soldier.
Yes.
You believe the establishment of Israel is totally legitimate,
yes,
as a home for Jewish people.
Yes.
So that's where you are coming from. How different from you? When I was a younger man, I remember in the United States, for example, many Jews who spoke out against the expansion of the Israeli state, the militancy, the increasing militancy of the Israeli state. And Netanyahu and the expansion of Israel, the West Bank, the squeezing of Gaza, all of that. Now, you, I think, have described that as a Zionist colonial project. And we've established that Zionism isn't a religion, it's political.
I served in the IDF, the Israel Defense Forces, between 1964 and 1966. Everything changed with the June 1967 war,
yes,
sometimes called the Six-Day War. In the course of that war, Israel trebled its territory. It captured the Golan Heights from Syria, the West Bank, including the old city of Jerusalem from Jordan, and the Sinai Peninsula from Egypt. And after the war, there was UN Resolution 242, which offered Israel land for peace, to trade land for,
yes,
peace. Israel was more interested in land than in peace, so the conflict persisted. And I served loyally and proudly in the IDF in the mid-60s, because in my time, the IDF was true to its name. It was the Israel Defense Forces.
Yes.
But everything changed after the victory in 1967. Israel became a colonial power, and the IDF became the brutal police force of a brutal colonial power. So I make a clear distinction between pre-1967 Israel, which had internationally recognized borders, having signed in 1949 armistice agreements between all its neighbors. So I distinguish between pre-1967 Israel, and I've never questioned its legitimacy, but I totally question, I not just question, I totally and angrily reject the Zionist colonial project beyond the Green Line, beyond the 1967 borders, that is to say, the Israeli occupation of the Palestinian territories.
Yes. The expansion of Israel and the creation of Gaza, which has been described as the largest open-air prison in the world with 2 million citizens. And as I think you've written, the deliberate attempt to deny them skills, education, and to keep them in labouring jobs. This was a Zionist project, clearly. Does that extend back to prime ministers like Golda Meir and others who were in power before Netanyahu?
Yes, most definitely, because Israel had a Labour-led government for the first three decades of its existence. And there was a Labour government during the June 1967 war, and it was the Labour government that began the colonial project, that began to build settlements immediately after the gun fell silence in June 1967. So, yes, the policy of building settlements in occupied Palestinian territories began long before the Likud came to power in 1977. But Benjamin Netanyahu has pushed Israeli policy way, way beyond what it had been under Labour.
Yes.
Labour, in 1993, under the leadership of Yitzhak Rabin, signed the Oslo Peace Accord with the PLO, with the Palestinians. And this was a historic move. The two mutual rejection was replaced by mutual recognition. But Rabin was assassinated.
Yes.
And the Likud came back to power under the leadership of Benjamin Netanyahu. And Benjamin Netanyahu had his first term as prime minister between 1996 and 1999. And he always rejected the Oslo Accord, and he spent his first term in office in a successful attempt to arrest and subvert the Oslo Peace Accords and reestablish Israeli control over the West Bank. And whereas Labour built settlements only in areas that were strategically important and that they wanted to keep permanently, under Netanyahu, there's been settlement expansion everywhere to make Israeli withdrawal from the West Bank impossible. And today Netanyahu claims that only Jews that have rights over the West Bank, or Judea and Samaria, as the yes. Israeli right like to call the West Bank. Netanyahu officially denies that the Palestinians have any right, national self-determination in the West Bank or Gaza.
Do we know who assassinated Rabin? And is it clear that it was because of his political position and his signature on the Oslo Accords?
The assassination of Yitzhak Rabin was a Jewish fanatic who was opposed to the peace process. He was opposed to the handing over of territory to the Palestinians, because he believed that the whole of the West Bank belonged to the Jewish people by divine right. And this was a political assassination which was completely successful. The aim was to derail the peace process, and the result was a very, very tragic, not as just assassination of Yitzhak Rabin, but also it was the derailing of the peace process that he had begun.
Yes, the assassination of an idea, essentially.
Yes.
The immigration from Russia, from elsewhere, to the State of Israel, largely, am I right in believing, under Netanyahu's period in office, which goes back now, as you say, to the mid-90s, was that part of the Zionist colonial project and expansion? and also an assault on any hope of a Palestinian state, a two-state solution, which has been offered. I mean, Bill Clinton almost got such a thing over the line, did he not, or did he, in your view?
Let's begin with Russian Jews. So one aim of Zionism from the beginning was the ingathering of the exiles, bringing as many Jews as possible from the four corners of the earth. And after the end of the Cold War and the collapse of the Soviet Union, there was a possibility to bring Russian Jews to Israel. And roughly a million Russian Jews came to Israel, and they tended to be very right-wing.
Yes.
Many of them became settlers on the West Bank, and they came from the old Soviet Union with huge spaces. They go to the West Bank, and there isn't room to swing a cat.
Yes.
So it didn't make sense for them to be giving back territory to Palestinians. And they had their own political party, which is right-wing. So they have influenced Israeli politics and contributed to the shift to the right in Israel.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
In your view, Professor Schlaim, is what has happened post the assassination of Rabin and his idea, is it reversible through democratic means, or is it destined to oppress the Palestinian people and Arabs forever, with the support of the United Kingdom and the United States and France as well, just to mention three of the powers that have recently lit up their prominent buildings, Downing Street, White House and the Eiffel Tower, with the Israeli flag after the atrocity committed by Hamas last Saturday.
I like to think the trend in Israeli policy towards fascism and the accompanying escalation of settler violence against the Palestinians on the West Bank and the provocations of the present government in around Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem, that I'd like to think that these are features of the present government rather than inherent and inevitable and inescapable. Because Netanyahu became prime minister at the end of last year, and he formed a government which is the most right-wing,
yes,
the most chauvinistic, the most overtly racist, and the most aggressive anti-Palestinian government in Israel's history. And he brought his government is not center-right, it's right and ultra-right,
yes,
plus religious nationalists. And it is this government that is responsible for encouraging the settlers on the West Bank to engage in violence against the Palestinians. And Netanyahu himself prides himself on being Mr. Security.
Yes.
And he prides himself on Israel being a really strong military power. And he's been saying that the Palestinians are finished, that
yes,
they can't do anything, that they're impotent, that in Israel, on the West Bank, Israel can walk all over them and there is nothing that they can do.
Yes.
And as for Gaza, his policy was one of containment, letting Hamas stay in power and govern Gaza, but keeping Gaza contained,
yes,
with a blockade that has been going on for 16 years.
Yes.
A brutal blockade, which is a breach of international law. It's a form of collective punishment. So his policy was to weaken the Palestinian Authority, which governs the West Bank from Ramallah, to weaken Hamas, but to keep the 2.3 million residents of Gaza in the open-air prison.
Yes.
This policy, this conception, has now totally collapsed. It collapsed on Saturday, the 7th of October, when the inmates broke out of the prison,
yes,
and attacked Israel. This was a game changer. In the past, there had been clashes between Israel and Hamas, but they were all inside Gaza.
Yes.
This time, the Hamas fighters broke through the barrier and attacked Israeli kibbutzim and settlements around Gaza and exacted a terrible toll on the civilians. So the Hamas, their message was, we are not finished.
Yes.
We can't be ignored. And they've taken back agency, and Hamas is the leader of the Palestinian resistance. The Palestinian Authority in Ramallah is a collaborationist regime which lacks,
yes,
legitimacy in its own eyes. So the only leader of real resistance to the occupation is Hamas. And in their terms, the attack on Israel was a success because they showed Israel that they cannot go on occupying, blockading, and oppressing the Palestinians, both in the West Bank and in Gaza, and not pay a price. And the Israeli public has woken up to the fact that Netanyahu has led them to a dead end, and that he is responsible for what has been happening. And there was an editorial in Haaretz, a liberal,
yes,
Israeli newspaper, an editorial which blamed Netanyahu for the present crisis.
We have had our own experience in Ireland, Professor Schleim, of imperialism and brutality and, for example, the Great Famine, in which people died and many left, and we never recovered really from that. It was imposed by the British. So we understand oppression and suffering. And terrorism was a consequence with the IRA. And in the end, it can be argued that it paid off. I was opposed to that terrorism, but it can be argued that it produced results. Let me ask you about your own feeling. The BBC, and I know the media and ignorance in the media, and susceptibility to the media's stupid sloganizing is a problem for mass understanding of this. This is why we're talking to you and trying to find out the facts. The BBC called Hamas Palestinian militants. They were attacked for that. My own personal view was that this was their behavior was a terrorist act. But I bow to your knowledge and your sensibility, because it seems to me you're saying that they showed spirit, resistance to tyranny, and that there are consequences for bad actions, and therefore they offered hope. Is that essentially what you're saying?
Not exactly. The attack on the Black Saturday was a terrorist action.
Yes.
Because it was directed against civilians.
Yes.
And killing civilians is wrong, period.
Yes.
So I condemn the attack on innocent Israeli civilians. And this is what the media doesn't do. I want to look at the context.
Yes.
Because the attack didn't happen out of thin air.
Yes.
It's a response to the most prolonged and brutal military occupation of military times.
Yes.
The occupation has been going on for 56 years. In 2005, Israel unilaterally withdrew from Gaza. But that was not a step towards comprehensive peace. It was a unilateral move by Israel. And after that, after withdrawing the settlers from Gaza, Israel was able to attack Gaza from the air indiscriminately.
Yes.
It became the killing grounds for Palestinians who have nowhere to escape.
Yes.
We have to look at the context. And the context is brutal Israeli occupation, which in itself is illegal.
Yes, so it is.
The occupation is illegal and unlawful. All the settlements are illegal without exception. The annexation of Jerusalem by Israel is illegal. So you could say that Israel received a taste of its own medicine.
Yes.
Because this is a situation in which the Palestinians live daily. The yes. occupation is daily violence against the occupation. And it's quite unrealistic to think that you can treat people so badly, so viciously, in such an arbitrary manner, in such an inhumane manner.
Yes.
And expect them to be good neighbors.
Yes, indeed. And I think everybody listening to you will feel acutely the suffering that you describe. Professor, when you look forward to the near future, this is the next weeks and months, but further forward, with the support, this what might be described as a thuggish Zionist government with a thuggish Zionist leader and an ever-expanding support and population could last forever. Do you look forward with any hope? I say what I said because they have the full, and in the words of Rishi Sunak, unqualified support from the United Kingdom. Joe Biden, although Anthony Blinken, the Secretary of State, is there trying to restrain them, Biden also offers his full support and said on television the other night, "I have known Bibi for 40 years, as if he was his best friend." With the support of the great world powers, Professor Schlaim, can Israel, as it were, get away with this forever?
Israel has been getting away literally with murder precisely because of the blind support it receives from the Western powers.
Yes.
Joe Biden has not just announced full support for Israel, but has given Israel a free pass to go invade Gaza and do whatever it likes. Rishi Sunak made a statement of full support for Israel, and he didn't even mention Gaza.
Yes.
You couldn't be more one-sided than that. And the trouble with American support, because America is a crucial outside power, the trouble with American support for Israel is that it is unconditional. America gives Israel money, arms, and diplomatic protection. But it's unconditional. So Israel doesn't have to pay any price for violating daily Palestinian human rights and international law. And the position of the British government is that Israelis should not be held to account. Because there is an investigation by the International Criminal Court of war crimes. And Britain, the British government, is opposed to investigating Israel for war crimes. So that is part of the problem, that Israel doesn't have to behave itself. It doesn't have to respect international law. And there is a real disconnect between Western governments and the publics. Ireland is not a good example of this, because in Ireland, both the public and the government are pro-Palestinian. But in Britain, in America, and in Germany, in most Western countries, the government is pro-Israeli and very, very lenient with Israeli. We never talk about sanctions against Israel, but the publics are increasingly vocal in their support for the Palestinians. And we see this in the growing number of Palestine Solidarity Campaign branches everywhere. And we saw this yesterday in the massive demonstration in London in support of the Palestinians.
A final question and thought to you, Professor Schlaim, and we're deeply grateful to you for your time. Ursula von der Leyen, the President of the European Commission, gave her unqualified support and went to Israel to do it. And many of us in the European Union and many people in Brussels are reproaching her for that. She did it on her own without any authority. That's not good in terms of the European mood as you've described it and as we know it. Can I ask you finally to comment on that, but also how dangerous this could be as we watch each hour this terrible tragedy unfolding further?
Ursula von der Leyen is totally one-sided in her support for Israel, and she had made statements in the past about Israel making the desert bloom, congratulating Israel on its birthday and on its achievements. And when European Union has a different policy, one of support for a two-state solution, and the important thing about European Union is that it's the main donor to the Palestinian Authority, and it's the main trading partner of Israel. So it has economic leverage.
Yes.
It could influence Israeli policy, but it has never translated its economic leverage, its economic power, into political leverage. So European Union has been useless at defending the Palestinians against Israeli encroachment and Israeli depredations.
Yes.
And the situation is very dangerous, because the same disconnect between governments and public that I talked about a minute ago in the West exists in the Arab world.
Yes.
Four Arab governments signed the so-called Abraham Accords with Israel, and Egypt and Jordan long ago signed peace agreements with Israel. But the Arab public, the street, are overwhelmingly pro-Palestinian and very angry about Israel's treatment of the Palestinians. They've never been angrier. The Arab street has never been more angry, more incandescent with rage than it is now, when they're watching the Israeli bombardment of Gaza and the most brutal aerial attacks, and especially the brutal attacks on civilians.
And the power, electricity and water cut off from hospitals where children are dying.
Yes. Feelings are running high throughout the Arab world, and Iran has remained in the background.
Yes.
It has not intervened. But Iran leads an axis of resistance to Israel, which includes Hamas in Gaza and Hezbollah in Lebanon. And Iran is capable of activating a second front, a northern front against Israel through Hezbollah. And this is why Antony Blinken is doing a tour of the Middle East and Arab countries to try and prevent the spread of the violence to the region. But he may not be able to.
Yes.
Because the status quo is not sustainable.
Yes.
This is precisely the lesson of the current crisis, the last attack on Israel, that the status quo is unsustainable. The Palestinians can't go on living like that. And America and its uncritical support for Israel is part of the problem.
Yes.
It's not part of the solution. And some right-wing people, especially in Israel, but also in America, say the Palestinian issue is dead. The Palestinians are defeated. There are other issues in the Middle East that are more important. We can just forget about the Palestinians. Now we know that this is not so.
Yes.
That the central issue, the central problem in the whole of the Middle East is Israel-Palestine. And this is the one issue that could blow up the whole region.
Professor Avi Shlaim, we are very grateful to you. Professor Shlaim is an Oxford historian on the modern Middle East. He is Emeritus Professor of International Relations at the University of Oxford and a Fellow of the British Academy. He is also the author of his recent memoir. It's called Three Worlds, Memoir of an Arab Jew, and it's published this year. Professor Shlaim served in the Israeli army and has never questioned the Israeli state's legitimacy. We're very grateful to you. Our hearts.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you very much. And please God, we'll get the chance to talk again as this progresses, but maybe in a happier time when justice is served. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
That's all we have time for now. Thank you all for listening. We will talk to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.